24th. We're learning couples in Tanakh. And tonight, I admit this is my favorite couple in Tanakh, at least my favorite one to teach. I'm not sure, I don't know if it's my favorite example of a couple, but it's certainly more than any other couple gives us a lot of material, a lot of dialogue. There's very little dialogue between husbands and wives in Tanakh. What do you have? A pasuk here and there between Yaakov and Rachel, between Sarah and Abraham.
Well, because we all understand what the other's about.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Yitzchak and Rivka have a little dialogue. And by the way, the dialogue between those three couples I just mentioned are often strained. Oh, if our son Yaakov marries a girl like that, you know, and when she does tell him, you know, Yitzchak, I think we have to send Yaakov up to find a wife. Even there's a subterfuge in that. That's not the real reason why he has to leave home. The real reason why he has to leave home is because Esau wants to kill him. Right? If not for that, I would imagine that they would have sent for a wife the same way that Avraham sent for a wife for Yitzchak. This one should be easier. They know where to go this time. Right? They don't have to make any deals at Wells. They don't have to make any, look for someone. You know where love? They know where Lavan is. She told him, go to Lavan. It's my brother. So call Lavan and send him a postcard and say, hey, you got any daughters there for my son? So it's a little strange. You know, say you're my sister, and does she have any say in that matter? Hurry, cook, prepare some food. I've got three strangers here that I've been looking for. I don't mean to judge our holy patriarchs and matriarchs by my standards of it's safe for me to say this, the Rebbetzin's not here, but I know if I talked like that, I'd get a frying pan on the head or something, I don't know.
You're not going to hear, all the nice talks is not relevant to the story, so you're only hearing the strange talks that advances the narrative.
Yeah, I always felt, hurry, the guests here, that Sarah is right behind Avraham, 100% in his Hachnosas Orchem, and she doesn't look at that as, hey, how about a please, No, that's not... when it's really the real problem is when you act like Ralph Cramden and you say, I'm the king of the castle and you've got to cook me a dinner. Remember that episode where he wants her to cook dinner for one of his friends? Right? Who's there? How you doing? Okay, those are pretty much the couples in Bereishis. I don't see any dialogue whatsoever between... Yosef and his wife. There's some interesting dichotomy between who gets to name the children, right? All of Yaakov's children are named by the mothers, except one. Only Levi says, I just know it says by Yikro, only by Levi. All the others, the woman is giving the name. And, I assume there was healthy dialogue about what name our child will have. But the names tend to be given, at least from Rachel and Leah, from the standpoint of their experiences. Right? When Esav was called, it says, Vayikra'u Shemo Esav. They all named him Esav. Yaakov was named Vayikra Shemo Yaakov. All right, but anyway, that is for the Torah. As far as Shmos, I don't have much of dialogue between Moshe and Zipporah. Although, she saves his life. That's pretty significant, right? She determines what needs to be done to save him from this trance that he was in, right? The Medrash does say something about her exasperation with Moshe's attention to the nation at the expense of the immediate family. It's quite clear with the fact that Moshe's own children don't ever get a shot at following him, right? When it's interesting, when the Benos Tzlofcha get a positive answer about their inheritance wish, you don't know what I'm talking about, the five daughters of Tzlofcha. So right after that, Moshe says to God, God, I know I'm not going to be here forever. Please make sure that you appoint a good leader after me. And God says, what do you think? I'm going to leave them without a shepherd? Right? I saw how well that went when they didn't have you for 6 hours. Don't worry. Right? So, and by the way, it's amazing. Abravanel points this out. Right after that, they get the mitzvah of Karbanos. The whole long Perek Chavches and Pinchas, why is that there? So the Abravanel says something very, very sharp. He says something very sharp. Maybe it's in there. That the first time when Moshe went missing, what did Bnei Israel do? We have to replace him. We have to have another medium between ourselves and God, an intermediate, right? So they made the Egel. So now that Moshe is really going to die, right? Are they going to make another Egel? What are they going to do? So he goes, no, calm down, guys. Yeah, I gave you a Mishkan. You have Kabbonos. Don't worry. Here, he's going to die now. But okay,
it's take a pill. You have Kabbonos.
Well, hopefully they learned something. It taught them a little bit. Okay, but that's the problem. So right after the Bnei Tzlofchad get their favorable response, so Moshe says, God, don't leave them without a leader. And he was winking at God. He goes, you know what I mean, God, right? My sons! I have two sons. My brother got a chance to go up to the mountain, and what a beautiful thing that happened there. It's sad, but my brother took off his high priest garments, and he put them on his son. What a way to go. And he just laid down and put his arms, and he just closed his eyes, content in knowing that everything he worked for is going to live on in his son. So Moshe says, how about some of that for me? Sent, you know, Rashi in a few places in this Torah, in the Torah says, I want to die like my brother Aaron. So it's not going to be, I'm sorry. And Tzipora complains a little about it. You know, Moshe was so busy with everybody else's problems that. Okay, that's a problem that's endemic to the Elis and the Shmuels and a lot of people in Tanakh who are in such
actually
leadership
complain,
positions.
Or was it just Miriam and
so in the Medrash she was complaining. Oh. Who remember who she was complaining to? To whom the complaint was addressed? The wives of Eldad and Medad.
Oh, the prophets.
Remember when Eldad and Medad were excluded from that group of 72?
Mm-hmm.
Right, so their wives were saying, "Oh, our husbands were in a mix of 72, and they got left out." So he said, "So Tzipora says, you should. That's for them. Okay, they lost the chance at put something on their resume. But you, the two of you, Duke, you don't know how lucky you are. Let me tell you what happens when you're chosen as a prophet, right? So that's where. And then Miriam overheard her say that. All right." Okay, so that's there's nothing between Elisheva and Aaron, right? Elisheva is.
We were learning on Shabbos, and we were trying to remember what his wife's name was.
Oh my goodness! Okay, Elisheva.
And we were going to ask you.
Okay, there you go.
Think about Queen of England.
I knew that.
Think about Queen of England.
I knew that.
The same thing.
Okay, so.
Elizabeth.
We had a few years ago. Our had a seventh granddaughter, and they named her Elisheva.
I got a couple of those too.
Yeah. So then in the rest of the Torah is not much to talk about. In the Neviim we have midrashically, we have Yehoshua marries Rachav. That's pretty special. And then you have Manoach. In fact, if you went to the Daf Yomi 2 days ago,
it
talks about all about Manoach and Slaponis. It's in the Daf, that Tzadik Aleph in the Seches Bava Basra. And there's not much more than that. I mean, you have Shaul and his wives, but of course you have Elkanah and Penina. That's the main couple in the Vim Rishonim to have a discussion about. And now we come up with the next major couple. So we're going to open up your Tanakh to Shmuel Aleph. To Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Chof Hei. Shmuel Aleph Yud Zayin Chof Hei. Is there any water down there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, can you go inside? Thank you, that'd be great. Thank you. Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Chof Hei in Shmuel Aleph. Okay, while you're looking, give you some background. I'll give you some background. There was an attempt at the hands of this particular battle to establish a new form of conquest. And actually, it's interesting that there was a Star Trek episode like this once, if you're a Star Trek fan.
Yes.
Where instead of fighting an actual war, right?
Yeah.
you do some kind of a simulated game, right? And what do you have to do all the destruction for? Just do the simulation, and then we'll act as if though that happened.
Yeah. People kill you, right? And stand in the line for this position.
Right. You know? So thanks a lot. So this is what is this new concept of battle? Is that why do we have to fight 10,000 against 10,000? And lose 8,000 on each side, and then maybe this side loses 8,000, this side loses 9,000, and this side wins, but we both lose, right? Let's start something new. One against one, right? And the winner enslaves the loser, that's all, right? We'll set up the terms and the conditions in advance. Now this sounds like, you know, fair game, but not when the guy on one side is 9'5", right? And the description of what he's wearing and what he how much it weighs and everything is just so outlandishly, it's almost exaggerated. We talked about that, I think, that he must have suffered from some kind of giantism, some kind of thyroid cancer that keeps on growing and growing. There's no way someone can be as tall as six of these on the same human being. It's just too much. Now, admittedly, they were not as tall as we are now. We're much healthier now. We're quite a bit taller. I can picture that someone who's about 6'5" made the average height person feel like a grasshopper, right? I once played on a basketball court got to play a little bit during halftime, but it was before a net pacer game in the old ABA when they played the red, white, and blue basketballs. So and we stayed on the court when the teams came out. We were 13, 14, we were in 8th grade. Those guys, I mean, just look like... And they're only about a foot and a half taller than us, or a foot taller. But I must tell you, can you imagine the way children look at us, right? But I shook hands with one of them, and he shook my whole hand, my whole arm. His hand fit my arm. So just the size of Goliath is just so crazy. But okay, he grew that big, and he says, all right, you pick one of yours, and let's see what we can do. What does this have to do with David's marriage? Took a look at Pasuk Chafei. Vayomer Ish Yisrael. So the people were saying, Hari'item ha'ish ha'oleh hazeh. Did you see this man coming up from the Philistine camp? Ki l'charefet Yisrael oleh. He's coming up to disparage the camp of Israel. V'hayoh ha'ish asher yakenu. And no one wants to fight him. It's suicide. All right? A, we'll certainly lose. So what's the point of that? And B, whoever goes is going to die. So what's the point? I don't mind dying for my nation and accomplishing something, but I'm going to die for my nation and accomplish nothing. Worse than nothing. I'm going to cause our side to lose. Now, one has to wonder at the wisdom of this kind of thing. Because what's the point of saying... Well, I didn't read it yet, but I think you all can guess what's happening here. He says, "Ha'ish asher yakenu ya'ashrenu hamelech osher gadol." The king will enrich him with great riches, right? The esbito yitenlo, and he'll give his daughter in marriage. That's rich enough, right? Veis beis aviv yaseh chofshi b'Yisrael. Here's proof that they must have been paying some kind of taxes, right? Mm-hmm. He'll make his house free. In other words, maybe it could be mean that they'll pay off the mortgage, mm-hmm. right? But it's more likely that he will no longer have to pay the property tax that he has to pay the king, right? His house will be free in Israel. Okay, so who is that daughter? Now, we found out already that... No, it's not. Shaul has two daughters, and the older one is named Merav, and the younger one is Michal. Okay, so this was always meant to be a daughter named Merav. Okay? So, what's interesting is that this is not the king talking. This is these are the soldiers talking. Did the soldiers fabricate this? I know there are some of Farshim that say that they did. I don't go for it. I don't get it. No soldier would have told David this just out of his own hat. It was because it was an announcement, right? Maybe the king actually... I'll tell you why some commentaries say the king never said it. Because at the end of the day, after David killed Goliath, he doesn't get the king's daughter, right? So maybe the king never said this. I don't know. There's a good reason why the king didn't give over his daughter to David, is because when he found out who was the one who killed this Goliath, right, it did not please him to give the daughter to him, because his great-grandmother was a Moabite. I'm just telling you from the standpoint of the Gemara. Yes.
Didn't the commentaries also say that Shaul thought that he didn't like his daughter and he thought she would be a snare to David?
You're talking about the second one now, but that's not because he didn't like her.
She would be bad for her.
No, he was using her, but it doesn't mean he didn't like her. I don't know that. But anyway, you're talking about the second daughter.
The one that he married.
The one that he ended up marrying, who's not in the picture yet. Okay. So I think I've told you before that in the entire Bible, it never says a woman loved a man, except Michal. It says Michal loved David. Her brother also says love David, but it says Michal loved David.
Didn't he love change?
Well, I don't know if we're going to get to that today, but I think her love always remained. Her disdain might have changed, right? Now remember, at this early part of their marriage, David is a nobody. She's the princess, right? Okay, so then she's the daughter of the king. She's going to be the sister of a king. She's going to be the wife of a king. She gets around. But later in the marriage, David had numerous wives. When did he take his second wife? Right? You're married to the king's daughter. When did he take? Who was his second wife?
Was it Abigail?
Abigail, right? So the pasuk, right after it says he married Abigail, it says, and Shaul gave over Michal to another man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, to Palti ben Laish. We'll talk about him too. All right, but let's get back to our point here. There is a daughter for David to marry if he gets this job done. It's a class on couples. I'd love to talk to learn the story of good David and Goliath here. It's really a classic of how David convinces Shaul that I'm up for this job. This is really, when you go on the next job interview, read these few psukim, how to convince someone that you can do this job. Right? Okay. All right, so... So how old David was is a matter of great, great controversy in the commentaries. How old David was is a function of how long Shaul ruled. Because the Seder Olam says he only ruled 2 years. Mm-hmm. Shaul only ruled 2 years altogether, which is a tremendous, tremendous compression of time. That means David is 28 here, which just does not seem right. The king would not tell a 28-year-old, "You're just a lad. You haven't fought in any battle. You're a young shepherd." It just wouldn't make sense. Yeah. He's already been crowned king. Right? That means, in other words, if Shaul is already king and he only ruled 2 years, that means David is at least 28. He's 28 in some months already. Right? It's just, I'll tell you what else doesn't make sense. Because when Shmuel was told they don't want to crown him king, mm-hmm. right? So it says, they told him, "You're old and your kids aren't following in your path. And, if your kids were better, it's all right. We'd appoint you the king. You'd rule for 5 years, 10 years maybe. And then your children would rule after you. Or if you were younger, we'd appoint you, and maybe you'll have some other good kids. But as it is now, you're old, and not many more years in your sack, and look what's coming after you. So we're not interested in you. Get us another king, right?" So Shmuel is old there, right? Mm-hmm. So if Chazal say he was only 52 when he died, but okay. But in other words, if he's about to appoint Shaul king, and Shaul only ruled for 2 years, that means Shmuel is 2 years before his death. When he appoints Shaul king, right? He dies just as Shaul dies, mm-hmm. right before Shaul dies. Okay, here is the rub. When we are interested when we are introduced to Shaul, he's looking for donkeys. Remember,
yeah.
His father lost donkeys, and he's looking for them. After when Shaul died, the son, his fourth oldest son, who ruled after him, was 40. That means when he's running out looking for his donkeys, his fourth oldest child is 38. And you're telling me a 50-year-old man is old and decrepit and can't rule? And this guy, Bachur Vatov, and... All of this makes Abravanel and his comment, and Radak, say that Shaul ruled 25 or 30 years. Right? His fourth oldest child was 8 when he became king. Right? And he was maybe, all right, he's in his 30s or something. And David was a young kid now. David's 14, 15, 16 maybe. And maybe even younger. Right? Well, Shaul can't rule 30 years. Well, look, there could have been some years already in between when he became king and this. Mm-hmm. He already had the story with Amalek, you know, there could have been some years already in between. Anyway, I place all that before you, and the confusion is because Shaul is the only king, only one, even Ish-bosheth were told, that we're not told how old he was when he became king, and unequivocally how long he ruled. It's a very cryptic pasuk. If you want to look now for a second, it's Perikin Gimel Pasuk Aleph. And it's not, I don't know. Write it down, look at it later. Okay, Perikin Gimel Pasuk Aleph. It's very cryptic for how long he ruled. English translations run through hoops to figure out what it means. Okay, so marrying the king's daughter is on the line. So David is expressing interest. Why not? He's sweetening the pot. Why shouldn't I be interested in this pot? Right? When his brother hears that he is expressing some interest, right? Look at Pasuk Chavav. Mahi yoseh, what shall be done, lo isha asher yakeh es haplishti aloz? Did I hear something about whoever kills this guy? Vehisir cherpa me'al Yisrael? Now, it's not that just, it seems from this that David isn't just interested in saving Israel from this terrible disdain and this calumny that this man is heaping upon them. It seems that David is interested in the prize, right? But then he says afterwards, Vehisir cherpa me'al Yisrael, I'll remove this disparagement from Israel. Who is this uncircumcised Plishti? Right. And they told him, what's going to happen to the person who kills him? His oldest brother heard this. And Eliyav became angry. His anger waxed on David. What are you doing here? Where did you leave the tzon, ma tzon, ha'ena, that you're a shepherd. You don't belong in battle. Go back home to the sheep. And right? Now David doesn't even defend himself. Why was David there? To bring them food. He didn't come to see the battle. He brought them to bring him food. He wasn't going to disobey his father. You see, Yosef is like, no, that's a Freudian slip. But you see, David is, you know, this psukim like Bnei Imin Yicharubi, Evan Moasu Abonim Hasol Rosh Pina, right? Right? Ha'isi Cherpa LeBnei Imin. Psukim like this in Tehillim, right?
But that would explain why that would go with the idea that he's younger, that he's 14, 15, because his older brother is like, come on, what are you doing?
It's hard to fathom talking to a 28-year-old kid this way. 28-year-old. 28 is ready for command in battle. Yeah. Are you kidding?
After the anointing?
He's been anointed already. It's after it in the text. I will tell you, I've seen some of Farshim. The author Me'am Lois quotes a few Mephoshim and say that this is Ein Mukta Mamu'ucha, and this is way before. That could work. All right. Then he was older when they anointed him, and now it's way before that. All right, but it's you have to explain to me why would the Tanakh put this out of order like this? Okay, this is why when Shmuel chose this guy first, God says, I don't want him, I hate him. And the other brothers that she just said, no, he's not the king. He's not the king. He says, God, I keep choosing the wrong guy. Right? He didn't even get a chance to look at David. Shisha didn't call him in, and I discussed that with you before. Why? But when God rejects the oldest, he says, that's not the one I want. I despise that one. So there Rashi says, because look how he talks. He said, this guy is such a zhlub. Right? Yeah? Let me talk. By the way, you're also stupid. You already saw him being crowned king. That's one, by the way, one of the reasons why Some of Farshim say this story is way before that. There's no way you would have talked to him this way if he's already king. Even Cinderella's sisters aren't that stupid after the shoe fit her foot. They were kind to her after that.
Even though he yelled at him, couldn't it have been that he was worried that he would get hurt?
So that, okay, that's a Bravanel who says that's, that it was, he was winking at him and said, hey, go along with this.
It sounds like him.
Go
like
along with this.
Somebody like a dozen years older, scolding.
Yeah. Bravanel says that he wanted to deflect attention to his kingship, that no one should guess, you know, why did Shmuel come to our house that day, and, you know, as he becomes more and more famous, you know, but the light bulb went off in Shaul's head, but no one else's head. Shaul tries to convince everyone what the reader knows, that David does intend to become the next king, not my son. Right? Okay, so David says, Vima David, Meo Sisi Ata, Halo Davarhu. It's very little cryptic there, no?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what he was telling him is, cut me some slack, bro. My daddy told me to be here. I didn't come here right? Okay. We're in chapter 17, Pasuk Chav Ches. Right? Okay, now let's turn in this same chapter to verse 55, Perek Nun He. Pasuk Nun He. Perek Nun Hei could only be two books of the Bible. Yeshayahu or Tehillim. Okay, it says, Uchiros Shaul as David, Yotzei Likras HaPlishti. When Shaul saw David after he had already... did David know he was dead? He hit him in the head, he fell, and then he runs over, and what David did to him is clearly that he's dead. He cut off his head, but was it possible that David feared that when I come to see if he's dead, if he's going to grab my foot and, you know, maybe he's playing dead? Right? I don't know. I wasn't there. But the reader can tell that, and you see some of the paintings of Goliath, he's always lying on his face.
Mm-hmm.
He's never lying that way. And it's correct, because the Tanakh cares enough to tell us that he fell forward, not backwards. He fell forward. I've actually read a little about the, you know, in the wake of the Kennedy assassination, of what happens when someone is hit from Iraq, obviously came towards him. Right? Didn't hit him in the back of the head, it hit him in the forehead.
No, but isn't traumatic brain injury? The brain is going to move and hit the back of the head.
But it probably didn't even take that to kill him, because if someone grew to be that tall, I think I told you this once, mm-hmm. that he would have to keep growing, and the one part of the body that can't take anymore is this. This starts to spread out, and this gets very soft. And I don't know if David knew that. It was just, Hashgacha Pratis, that he killed him instantly. Now, it does say he came over to him and killed him. It says he killed him by cutting off his head.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just from the standpoint of the people watching. The people watching, remember, there were two sides of the mountain, thousands of people watching this. They were all very much interested in this battle, right? So they might not have even seen the rock hit him. They didn't even know what's going on. They just see their guy fall, and this little kid is running over and then starts to slice off his head. What's going on here, right? So the science that I'm referring to is that he was dead before he fell.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, he didn't have any moment to catch any footing or anything. The whole body was out, like a massive whatever, a stroke or something. And he was just totally out before he had a chance. So it's not like it would fall backwards if you try to gain your feet, maybe, or you just, or crumple, but he just... Okay, anyway, so when Shaul saw David, Likras HaPlishti, right, he already started this. Wow, this kid won. Oh, my goodness, the over-under was crazy, and he just totally beat Vegas on this, right? So, Kiro Shaul is David Yotzei Likras HaPlishti, Omar al Avner Sar HaTzava. Ben mi ze hanar Avner? Love when they add that Avner again. Why do they have to put the word Avner there? You know, like it's like a term of endearment. It says Ben Mizehanar. It says Vayomer El Avner, right? Ben Mizehanar Avner. It's like Ma'atoru E Yirmiyahu. You see that pasuk, right? Vayomer Hashem El Yirmiyahu. Ma'atoru E Yirmiyahu. Look it up. You'll see. All right. So second time it's just Ma'atoru E. But anyway, so ben mizeh hanar Avner. So Avner's answer is, remember Avner, chenav shecha melachim yadati. Another reason why the Akvat says that this was before the crowning, because the story right before this is that Shaul started to become melancholic and he needed some calming, soothing, and David was playing harp for him. He met David's father already. They were talking, they were schmoozing, he gave him over and he said, I'll come back for him another time. So what's this? What do you mean, who's your father? He met his father, he knows his father. So that makes the Gemara, of course, ask. He's not saying, who is this kid? He's saying, who's his father? I heard about his father. His father's the grandson of a Moabite. What did I do? So this harp's like a, almost sounds like a Gemara. It sounds familiar that there are three. It's a Gemara that says three. Tosfos says there seems to be a fourth in Tanakh. You can really check your Bikias now. Seems to be a fourth, but there's a Psikta that actually mentions all four. Three Tanakh characters, and they all have to do with marriage. Three Tanakh characters made deals with God that weren't smart. They all could have had very bad endings. But three of them had good endings, and one of them had a very bad ending. Right? So what are the three good endings? Eliezer is one, whoever gives me water and my camels. So the Gemara says, worst possible scenario. What happens if a Canaanite comes out? Someone that Avram told you they shouldn't marry her. What happens if, I don't know, you know what I'm saying? Suma, Geras, whatever. But
maybe the well was juice on.
No. Haran is far away from Canaan.
I mean, so I don't know, but someone just not appropriate for Yitzchak. A contentious, you know, I don't know. And just generosity with water is your whole benchmark? Ah, but he still got answered well. He got Rivka. Who's the second?
Yaakov. If you give me, bread and my way and I'll give over a tenth of my...
It's a deal. Gemara in the beginning of Cholin talks about what kind of nature of that deal, what kind of what's the nether about, but...
When he calls for fire from Hashem.
Okay, but that's not a deal. I mean, it could have gone bad.
Sure.
No, but the deal here is... What's our case here? Whoever kills Goliath gets to marry my daughter. Yeah. What could go wrong there?
The daughter doesn't want to marry.
No, well, that's for sure.
Exactly what happened.
That the king doesn't want, or worse, a mamzer. The Gemara actually gives that example. What if a mamzer kills him? What if an eved kills him? What if a woman kills him? I don't know. So,
the guy who said when the first one who comes out to meet me after the battle.
Okay, that's the one that goes bad. Fourth one that the Gemara in Tainus doesn't mention, but the Psikta mentions is. It's mentioned twice in Tanakh. It's mentioned in Perek Aleph of Sefer Shoftim, and it's mentioned in Perek Tezvav and Sefer Yehoshua. Twice. That's the one we should know. Kalev ben Yefune said, whoever conquers Kiryat Sefer gets to marry my daughter. Anyone remember her name? Achsa. Yes. Achsa. Sound familiar? Remember she jumped off her camel and she said to her father, give me pools of water because I've been to Kiryat Sefer. It doesn't hold water well. And she said, give me them. I need pools of water. I can't live here without water. Anyway, so that too could have gone just as wrong as this one, right? All right. Anyway, we talked about this, that the fact that the real tragedy is that Yiftach's daughter never had a chance to get into this class. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's the direct dichotomy of what we've been talking about in these four cases. Is that it says three times in a small little says of four or five psukim, it says three times. She never got married, she didn't know a man, her friends cried for her because she died of a sula, and then she went up to the mountain and they all cried for her because she never got married. That her father didn't necessarily actually kill her and put her on an altar to slaughter her to God. That would have been a terrible ketzef upon Israel. Mm-hmm. It just said he kept his vow for her. And Ibn Ezra says if his vow was not, I'm going to make her holy and slaughter her to God. The vav, v'ha'alisiu ola, is not the vav that is mosif, but the vav that is called the conjunctive vav, the or. Makeh aviv ve'imo mos yumas. You don't have to hit both, right? Either one will do for that punishment. So when it says this week's parsha, kol she'ein lo snapir v'kaskeses, a fish that is missing fins or scales is not kosher, because the implication of a fish that is missing fins and scales is unkosher is that if it has one of them, yes, it is kosher.
Like shark.
You hear? You know what I'm saying?
Shark.
No, sturgeon.
Okay, you hear it? You hear it? A fish that is missing fish, fins, and scales is unkosher, might give the implication that if it has one of them, it is kosher. So it means a fish that is missing fins or scales makes it treif. Makeh aviv o imo. So too, it'll be kadosh l'shem, or I'll bring it up as an ola. In other words, holy if it's a human being, and I'll bring it up as an ola if it's an animal. Okay? And if you know the Gemara that gives the worst case scenario of all the cases, it says, Eliezer, what kind of stupid deal? What if a Canaanite? What if a Mavam Chigeris is suing? You're going to ensure that Yitzchak will marry her? And it says by Shaul, Shaul, what if a Mamzer and Evid would kill Goliath? You're going to give your daughter over to a Mamzer? And it says by Yiftach. Remember what the Gemara says? What's the worst case scenario by Yiftach?
Dog.
Chazil.
It says, what if a dog, a pig, or a camel would come out? You can offer a camel to God? So what, I have to ask the author of this Gemara. You don't know that worse than that came out? Right? There's no death penalty for offering a pig on God's altar. It's a big ketzef, it's a terrible thing, but there's no death penalty. All right, it got someone in trouble in the Hanukkah story in the beginning there, but still, it's not death, but killing a human being on God's altar to God? To fulfill an oath to God, that would have made every headline across the whole Jewish world. It's not even mentioned. It's enough. He kept his vow.
Isn't a promise? You can't make a netter that's against.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The only reason why he did it is because
it wasn't against the law.
Because she insisted.
Right.
No, she insisted. You can't make a netter on someone else. The only that you can make on someone else is that they should be a nazir,
yeah,
if it's your child. But you can't make, you can't say, how can I make a nazir on you?
There's a distinction between the three stories that you were saying that worked out and the one that didn't, is that the three stories that worked out, there was an element of a person being deserving, either by conquering a city, by killing someone, or by demonstrating an act of kindness, whereby, like, the other thing was a complete fluke. Whoever walks out of my house, there was no...
Yeah, it was an impetuosity on his part, and that's how he's described. The opening pasuk that describes Yiftach in Perek Yud Aleph in Sefer Shoftim is that he was pochez, the same word pachas kamayim, like Reuven. Reuven is impetuous, right? He sees Bilha and he has to. Yiftach is a Gilgal of Reuven. Don't look that up. I'm just making it up right now. All right, so no, they're both described by the same very unusual Hebrew word. Okay, so that is.
Did he have any armaments on him when he went out?
David did not. Okay, so Shaul wanted him to have, but he just said, Kilo Niso, which can mean, I haven't tried them on, they don't fit me. Armaments have to get used to it. Or, and Rashi likes to say, Kilo Nisa, it means it won't be as big a miracle if I kill him with mm-hmm. You know. I need mobility. And I won't be able to sling a good shot with a heavy armor on my arm or, you know, I need to be.
Because it could be, I mean, that Shaul was away from the action. He was so far back that he couldn't see.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to add on to what Baruch just said. It's a clear delineation between the cases. It's also, though, is that the three that succeeded, you know, there's an element of bashert, you know, that we have to make a hishtadlus, but that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sets us up, that there's someone out there for us to find that'll be presented to us. It's very well suited for us. So the hashkacha pratis of that helped these three have a good ending. But Yiftach's story is the exact opposite. It turns this on its head. His story ended up not allowing her to marry. So it's just, it was just all, it's all together, you know. It's all, But the reason why it happened is because she insisted. She insisted. There was a few stories before then.
And Rivka insisted.
No. Yiftach's daughter insisted.
Insisted.
That her father keep the nether, that he made it work. She didn't even know what the nether was when he got upset when he saw her leaving the house. Right? He said, what's going to be, God, you know, Dad, you made the nether, the war turned out well. What's going to happen then when leaders make the nether? You know, you see a mindset. I wouldn't behave this way, but the mindset. I'll give you an example of his mindset. There's someone who, when I ran, a very old man, told a story recently from, I think it was when the Ayatollah came to power, I'm not sure, but now he's a very old man, and he said that let me just give you a hint as to the mindset of the Iranian. He said he was so close with his Muslim neighbor. They were neighbors at home, and they had a shop, one right next to the other. They were so close that when each one had to go abroad or had to go traveling, the other one guarded took the key to their house and took the key to their shop. And they did it for 20, 30 years. Well, trusted each other with all their worldly property. When the Ayatollah came to power, this man was up for some chayav misa. He was given the death penalty if he stays. Right? So the neighbor just said, would you give me the honor of being the one that can behead you? maybe in the Wall Street Journal a few months ago. He said, can you please give me the, I would love to have that you give me the kavod of being the one who has this chus of beheading you. As if though that you'll understand that. It's such a big chus for us to behead someone who's kayev to the malchus. So he just said, that's what we're dealing with. What am I saying here? Is that when Yonatan was in battle, and he took a little bit of the honey that he found in the middle of the battle, unbeknownst to him that his father made a cherem, he made a neder, that no one should eat anything until the battle is over. It was this foolish thing. By the time the battle was finished, all the men were eating the meat before they koshered it. They were eating the blood because they were so famished, right? And they sinned much worse than eating a little honey. But when Shaul wanted to inquire of God over whether the battle was going to go positively or negatively, he didn't get an answer from God. So he said, Hevei Tamim, something bad has happened. Sort of like God leaving the camp by Ochan. Same kind of story, actually, right? And Shaul said, someone in our camp sinned, and God isn't going to favor us until we uproot the sin. And then Yonatan confessed that I heard that you made a nether, but I didn't even hear about the nether. And he says, stand before me, you shall die right here, Yonatan. And Yonatan said, I'm ready to die. That's the mindset. Yiftach's daughter is saying, if you made a neder, my father, and you won the battle, I'm ready to die. Or whatever else your neder was. Right? But in that story, Yonatan was spared. You know, the people convinced him, listen, it's one thing if he had known about the cherem. First of all, your cherem was very, very ill-advised. Look, everyone was eating, drinking blood because of your cherem. Right? So, and he didn't know about it, so they saved him. We read about this whole story on Motzei Shabbos. When you do the Pidyon Psukim.
Yes.
Right? So, but you see the mindset that's so, you violate your father's cherem, I'm ready to die right here. Right? Okay, So David is a good answer, I guess. The Gemara says he could have been a mamzer, could have been an eved. It was the same, because a Moabite is a mamzer, right? As far as the halacha is concerned, right? Except that there might be a difference. See, unbeknownst to Shaul is that when this great-grandmother of this kid who just killed the giant who's supposed to now marry a daughter, that there was a debate during that time about the marriage to that woman. Right? Now, Shmuel is in a quandary because according to the simple pshat, unlike the different order that we talked about before, But according to the simple pshat, Shmuel already knows David has to be king.
Yeah.
But he also knows that there are these rumors that are spread around that, you know, Ben Mizah now, who's this kid's father? I can't give my daughter over to him. And he doesn't. He doesn't. He gives her over to another man named Adriel HaMacholati. Okay? So Shmuel is in the quandary. What can Shmuel do to inform the populace that this man can join the Kehillah and can become king? Jonas, you have an answer?
He writes
the Book of Ruth. Correct. He writes Ruth, and he's smart. He doesn't hide the fact that there was opposition then too. Don't sweep it under the carpet. It's better to address the opposition that existed at the time and show how they responded to that opposition. Right? That's not what most people would do today. They would just you know, whitewash anything but the opinion that they want to promulgate. Right? All right, so whatever it is. So they everything is subjective today. So that's what's going on now. So Shaul refuses to give over. And let's turn to Perek Yud Chet, Pasuk Vav. When David returns back home, Mistama, he's no longer carrying the Goliath's head. It says he took the head all the way to Yerushalayim. Now this, you know where this is? This is right near Beit Shemesh. I was just taking one on a tour of the places where this is. There's a lot of history of Shmuel Aleph right near Beit Shemesh, the Dulam caves where David hid. It's right all there. Right? You're in Beit Shemesh. I don't know if you look at the topography. You're in Beit Shemesh Gimel. You're right near Rolling Hills. That's where the whole David and Goliath situation happened. Right. So David, yeah. It's not really that far from Yerushalayim. Yeah. I had to go from Beit Shemesh to Shari Tzedek Hospital, and if you go to the highway and it'll go around, the traffic, it's crazy. But I went some back roads. It was crazy. I had to drive 10, 15 minutes. It's very winding. You can't go too fast. But I found myself right near Yad Vashem. I'm coming right behind. It was like big savings of time. But you have to go with a, what do you call it, a GPS. You have to, it's crazy turns here and there. Miss one turn, then you're going to be in, who knows.
In an Arab village.
Yeah. Right, you could be in Syria. Yeah. All right, so then, Pasuk Vav, it says, V'hipa v'olam b'shuv David me'hakosas ha'plishti. When they came back from this, the word spread around. It was already on the news, I'm sure. V'teitzena ha'noshim mikol ha'rei Yisrael. The women came out from all the cities, Lashir, in order to sing, v'hamecholot, and they had musical instruments, l'krat Shaul HaMelech, in order to greet Shaul HaMelech, b'tupim, b'simcha, u'v'sholishim. Sholishim are probably triangles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, see those?
Yeah.
It says three, right?
It's like symbols here.
These are wind instruments, some string instruments. Okay, but the interesting thing is that this is the only pasuk in the whole Tanakh where the words Shaul and Melech meet. Huh. Hear that again? The only pasuk in the entire Bible where the words Shaul and Hamelech in either order, either Hamelech Shaul or Shaul Hamelech. Right? Sometimes the Bible just says Vayomer Hamelech El David or something. Or more often, Vayomer Shaul El David. It means that the author of Shmuel didn't think of Shaul as much of a melech. But isn't it ironic that the only pasuk where he's called Shaul HaMelech is a pasuk where he's taking great umbrage of what's being said? Because what's being said is, "Batanena anashim ha'mesachakot v'tomarne hikash Shaul ba'alafav v'David b'rivavotav." This is a pasuk that goes gets quoted quite a few times. When David tries to hide with the Plishtim, right, remember? And they said, isn't that the guy that the dancing girls said David kills in the 10,000s? Who do you think, who do you think those 10,000s are? Those are Philistines, right?
Yeah.
So, So the Malbim says something sharp. He says that, you know, they weren't praising David ten times more. They were praising Shaul 10 times more. Prove it. Be'alafav. What David does with 10,000 soldiers, Shaul does with 1,000 soldiers. He cussed Shaul. If it was without the bet, then I would say, okay, Shaul kills in the thousands. But it just shows Shaul's insecurity. He was already feeling insecure. Right? The story of Amalek is in the past. You know, he feels very insecure. The king, think of a chessboard, if you will, ought to be satisfied, even if there are more powerful pieces on the board. He ought to be satisfied that he's the most important piece on the board, and that should be enough for you. Right? No one's dancing and singing that David is more important than you. But what's so terrible about David being a greater warrior than you? Right?
Could be greater warrior, but not so much. You're going to have to be a greater king.
Well, look, if you're insecure, then you're going to say,
That's
right? You have to be secure to tell your brother, you know, Aaron, you're right. I'm wrong about the meat. An insecure person on the first day of the Mishkan would say, Aaron, don't show me up today. This is my, I'm giving everything over to you. What are you doing with me here? You have to publicly ask me whether I'm doing right, whether I'm right or wrong here? Zah still, shut up already.
He knew he was going to lose the kingship.
I'm sorry?
He knew he was going to lose it, and he was suspicious.
Right. Oh, no, you're right. He has good reason to be paranoid. Didn't he? Okay, we didn't get much into the David-Michal relationship, but we will, Mitzvashem, dive right into that next week. And if you want to just read ahead, Perkei Chet talks about both sisters, so we'll learn some.
Shako. And that's everybody back from where I came from.
His father's name is Shako.
Okay,
and I think one of his sisters is
Mira. I'm sure that's Kazi Dama. You know, is he Richard Dabber?
Yeah, it is.